You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. As well, you can hear these podcasts at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. There are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, which are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of Collected Works, Volume 217A, translated by Catherine Krieger. It's entitled Youth and the Etheric Heart, Essays and Addresses by Rudolf Steiner. This is Part 6, and these are beginning of the addresses given in 1923, and this one is entitled The Cognitive Task of Academic Youth, address given after the burning of the Goetheanum on New Year's Eve, 1922-23, and this was given in Dornach on January 6th, 1923. All the extraordinarily loving words and expressions of intimate connection to what we lost through this terrible catastrophe would fill a book. So let me simply read the names of those who signed these words of concern and devotion to our cause. These words indicate how deeply our communications have affected the hearts of many individuals. They are also tokens of intensely felt wishes and actively willed decisions to work to regain what we have lost. I find it appropriate to convey all this to you, because for many of you, the extent to which others share in our work and loss will certainly be a source of strength. Our cause is not intended to be merely theoretical. Our cause is one of work, of human love, and of devoted service to humanity. And thus actions or intentions to act have a place in what we say here. I will read only the names of those friends not present here, since the hearts of all of you who have shared these days of painful togetherness have already expressed themselves, often mutely, but nonetheless profoundly and clearly. In brackets, there's the reading of the names. We may safely assume that what we are attempting here is deeply rooted in many hearts, and I would like to use the time reserved for tonight's lecture to take a break from reflections on the theme of our gathering and to honor the fact that this course has drawn non-resident friends in great numbers, in addition to those customarily working for the anthroposophical cause here in Dornach. I am thinking especially of the younger friends in attendance. For all those who take anthroposophy seriously, it has certainly been very gratifying to see these young people find their place within our movement in such beautiful, profound, and heartfelt ways. We must be absolutely clear about the significance of the fact that young souls involved in mastering scholarly and artistic subjects are finding ways to work together in and with the anthroposophical movement. The young friends in attendance at this course may have seen the Goetheanum for only the first or second time, and surely did not expect to leave it in its current state when they returned home. My thoughts turn first to these younger friends, because all who take the anthroposophical movement to heart must actually share directly in the concerns of any groups or individuals within the movement. For the most part, our younger friends are attempting to find their way to anthroposophy from intellectual life. In particular, I would like to begin by addressing those who come from academia. It is there that they first felt the urge, though it cannot be said that academia produced that urge, to join forces with others in common striving within the anthroposophical movement. What drove these young people to us was primarily the sacred earnestness of efforts to fill the human soul with intellectual or spiritual life. The spiritual life of anthroposophy, however, does not come easily, nor does it come through the direct perception favored today. It is no secret, not even in our literature, which grants access to anthroposophical work to anyone, anywhere, that the route to anthroposophy is difficult, but only because it relates to the most profound and powerful human dignity, as well as to the specific needs of our era. Anyone who does not underestimate the signs of decline in our time must acknowledge the need for progress of the sort that is at least attempted in the anthroposophical movement. We must certainly not forget that there are multiple ways for modern human beings to approach anthroposophy. One way is by attempting, with real inner devotion, to achieve personal perception of spiritual worlds, thus convincing oneself that everything we communicate from spiritual worlds is founded on truth. It is indeed essential for some individuals, or perhaps even an unlimited number of people today, to follow this serious, difficult path. On the other hand, I must emphasize repeatedly that anyone who applies unbiased, healthy common sense is capable of fully grounded inner insight into the truth of anthroposophy. This is a fact that must be emphasized repeatedly to avoid any appearance of validating the completely unfounded objection that only clairvoyants who can see into the spiritual world can relate to the truths proclaimed in the anthroposophical movement. Today, our intellectual life in particular, and our civilization and culture in general, impose many biases on us, and these biases make it difficult to convince ourselves of the truth of anthroposophy without benefit of clairvoyance. The Anthroposophical Society, however, is here to point out the way and to work to eliminate more and more of modern civilization's biases. If the Anthroposophical Society does its job in this respect, we have reason to hope that the necessary inner powers of cognition will indeed become available to those who, for whatever reason, cannot aspire to the exact clairvoyance described here, so that they will nonetheless be able to convince themselves fully of the validity of anthroposophical knowledge. But how little inner personal connection young people in today's civilization have to their fields of study, to the knowledge and insights they are meant to achieve. For the most part, individual areas of expertise are presented to young people superficially and in systematic ways unsuited to expressing the full value of so-called empirical insights, which are often extremely significant. Any academic discipline or specialty cultivated today includes detailed truths that are sometimes quite shattering. If these truths were presented to young people in the right way, they would serve as microscopes or telescopes for the soul and could reveal formidable existential secrets. If they emerged from the human depths of individuals in academic life and were fostered carefully and used properly, they would be tremendously informative and extremely compelling for young hearts and souls. But today these truths are embedded in unresponsive systems and are often presented to young people with total indifference. As a result, students' relationship to the informative possibilities of many different fields of empirical scholarship remains highly superficial. We might even say that many, if not most, young people in academia pursue their studies without any inner involvement whatsoever. They allow the subject matter to pass in front of them like a panorama that repeats as needed until they pass their exams and find a teaching position. Yet another unique path to anthroposophy is accessible to young academics. If our educational system lived up to its possibilities in terms of scholarship, cognition, and inner vitality, academic studies could and should offer the most solid point of departure for achieving independent perception. I say quite deliberately, independent perception of anthroposophy's spiritual treasures.
It sounds almost paradoxical to say that students' hearts should be involved in everything presented to them, but the possibility does exist. For someone with the appropriate subjective disposition and innate energy, even the driest book or lecture can be deeply moving, despite the lack of any compelling energy on the part of the author or lecturer. When we meet the best and brightest of the young friends joining the anthroposophical movement, we are sometimes deeply touched to realize how little the, in quotes, education industry has given both their hearts and their heads. These harsh words may seem unforgivable to some of you, but I am sure most of the young academics present will understand. This situation is not their fault. It is their destiny in the context of modern civilization. The developments in the natural sciences that I attempted to describe in this course have brought our civilization to the point where young people ought to be experiencing profound trepidation. Even without anthroposophy, they should experience some sort of trepidation as a consequence of their fully human involvement in scholarly attempts at understanding. Any serious and conscientious student of the modern natural sciences can experience some aspects of what confronts human souls struggling with the problem of cognition. Anyone who takes the scientific perspective is confronted with great cosmic problems that are often disguised as petty formulations of facts. These formulations compel us to seek solutions to the soul riddles presented by scientific facts. Without tackling these riddles, we cannot go on living. We feel anxious. If only our scientific studies would fill us with this trepidation, it would produce not only a longing for the spiritual world, but also the ability to perceive it. If presented to human souls and hearts in the right way, even inherently unsatisfying insights and perceptions can kindle higher strivings. In the context of our modern pursuit of knowledge, it can be shattering to realize that there is no basis for experiencing its impact on the human being as a whole. Unless endowed with special gifts and longings, young people face insurmountable obstacles to approaching their highest humanity. If we turn away from the sciences and consider the humanities, we find that they too, if presented from a fully human perspective, would produce a soul sensation of being unable to breathe. All the abstract ideas and documented research findings and everything else we find in the humanities today, if presented to young people with human involvement, would result in a compelling urge to get out into the fresh air. And that breath of fresh air is what the anthroposophical worldview is meant to bring to the modern humanities. Anyone who has followed the gist of my lectures on the development of modern science will certainly not be able to say that I have been excessively critical of it. To the contrary, I have attempted to prove in these lectures that the modern natural sciences, and ultimately the modern humanities as well, have served and must continue to serve as foundations of civilization upon which we can continue to build. But we cannot help being human. We cannot help being creatures of body, spirit, and soul. Of necessity, young people today are confronted with knowledge that does not embrace their full humanity. Nonetheless, the noblest and most forceful human strivings could still be kindled in these young people if they were introduced to this inherently unsatisfying but necessary knowledge through the full humanity of others, in the highest sense of the word. If that were the case, our young people would need to hear nothing more than the achievements of the modern physical sciences and humanities to develop both the innate urge and the ability to receive spiritual science in full humanity. The seed thus planted in them would then grow into the anthroposophical science we need to ensure the survival and progress of human civilization. I believe that if our young friends reflect on these seemingly paradoxical words, they will find a characterization of the most significant anguish imposed on them during their academic studies. I assume that this anguish is why most of them have come to us. But for many, this anguish already belongs to the past, and it is too late to catch up. Anything missed at the appropriate point in a young life is no longer available later in the same form. The substitute for it is to recognize the unique task of young people in cultivating modern anthroposophical activity. Your task, should you choose to accept it, is to do whatever your own individual convictions tell you to do on behalf of the anthroposophical movement. Do what you recognize as necessary for the survival of human civilization. If you do this, the consciousness of having done your duty toward humankind and the cosmos in an age of extreme human difficulties will persist in your hearts for the duration of this lifetime and beyond. This consciousness will more than make up for what you have lost. If we have a right sense of the young people's situation today, we will also look in the right way at the fact that students have found their way into our circles. And as a result, we in the Anthroposophical Society will gradually develop a talent for establishing connections to young people who, for one reason or the other, are not members. From our current sorrowful situation, I hear words resounding that I can also impart to the oldest members of the Anthroposophical Society, namely that in the Anthroposophical Society today, human beings who truly understand themselves as such can experience something that must be considered seriously if human civilization is to survive, if forces of decline are not to gain the upper hand over forces of ascent. In the context of modern culture and civilization in general, it sounds almost comical to say that we need to ensure that human souls and spirits can act appropriately in the time between falling asleep and reawakening. In the Anthroposophical movement, however, you have learned that the human spirit and soul are seeds we contribute to the future and to eternity. The aspect of the human being that stays behind in bed when we sleep and is visible as we carry out our daily work from morning to evening is not carried through the portal of death into the spiritual supersensible world. Through the portal of death we take only our subtle spiritual aspect, which also exists outside the physical and etheric bodies when we sleep. For the moment, let us disregard the significance of sleep for human beings here on the earth. Through anthroposophical spiritual science, we realize that this subtle substance, which is imperceptible to ordinary consciousness, but alive and active in the time between falling asleep and reawakening, is the aspect we take with us through the portal of death. It is the guise in which we perform our tasks in worlds different from this earthly world, and our ability to perform these tasks depends on the extent to which we have cultivated this soul-spiritual aspect. In the spiritual world, which is all around us, just as the physical world is, live human soul beings not currently incarnated in physical bodies. They may have decades or even centuries to wait before they incarnate on the earth again. These souls exist in spirit as we physical human beings exist on the earth. Historical events among physical human beings are shaped not only by earthly individuals, but also by forces streaming in from human beings in the period between death and rebirth. These forces are quite real. Just as we stretch out our hands, these beings stretch out their spirit hands into our immediate present. Historical writing, based entirely on earthly documentation, is dead and dry. In truth, the history that takes place on the earth is co-determined by spiritual forces belonging to those between death and rebirth. Our history is the result of collaboration between us and human beings currently not incarnated on the earth. We sin against humanity by failing to educate our young people in the right way. But what if we fail to educate our own spiritual aspect, so that it can develop ever more consciously after passing through the portal of death? If we fail to do this, we sin against humankind's evolution, against the noble work that should be done by unembodied human beings working out of invisible worlds. Between death and rebirth, individuals who neglected to cultivate their soul spiritual aspect while on the earth experience clouding of their consciousness instead of increasing illumination. If we are to become fully conscious of our humanity, we must include our spiritual aspect. Modern human beings with an appropriate understanding of the anthroposophical movement's impulses need to take anthroposophical knowledge seriously. Knowledge acquired through anthroposophy is a life-giving treasure, a cosmic life force. We sin against humanity in a higher sense when we neglect to cultivate what earthly humanity needs for its continued development. The absence of this aspect of our humanity necessarily leads to the decline of earthly life. In addition to what we gladly gain from spiritual science on a more or less theoretical level,
it is essential that we also sense the profound seriousness of joining forces with others on behalf of an all-encompassing human concern that we grasp only in the Spirit. This concern belongs to young and old alike. It is not limited to any specific group of people. To me, it seems to be a unifying concern that can bring young and old together so that a single spirit prevails within the Anthroposophical Society. My hope is that young people will contribute the best they have to offer, that older people will learn to understand this contribution, and that understanding on one side will meet with understanding on the other. Only then will we move forward. May the sad days we have just been through, and the pain and sorrow that have overcome us, now fill our hearts with resolve, not with mere wishes or promises, but with resolves so deeply rooted in our souls that they become actions. Even in small circles, we will need actions to compensate for our great loss. Youthful deeds, if they take the right paths, are deeds the cosmos can use. And as older people, the most beautiful thing we can wish for is to work together with individuals still capable of youthful deeds. If we truly know this, dear friends, young people will also approach us with understanding. We will be able to do what is needed to compensate for our great loss, only if the young people who can bring us what the future needs can also see, to their great satisfaction, no doubt, good examples of what older people can do to compensate for this loss. Let us make every effort to see what is good and powerful in one another's contributions, so that our strengths enhance each other. Only then will we move forward. The end of part 6.